This is AgriPulse Open Mic. I'm your host, Jeff Nally. Our guest this week is Todd Wilkinson, president of the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by NCIS, the National Crop Insurance Services. Crop insurance, the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. AgriPulse Open Mic continues with NCBA's Todd Wilkinson next. Today's Open Mic segment is brought to you by America's crop insurance industry, which is thankful for the continued support of farmers, commodity organizations, rural businesses, lenders, and lawmakers who are fighting to maintain a strong farm safety net, providing individualized protection on more than 490 million acres of farmland. Crop insurance remains the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. This is AgriPulse Open Mic. The beef industry has proved its cyclical nature time and time again, both with herd numbers and cattle prices. South Dakota cattleman Todd Wilkinson is president of the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. He's pleased to see the profitability pendulum swing back to the grower's favor.
So there's money in all sectors, from the cow-calf feeder, the backgrounder, to the feedlot operator. You know, and what I look at is that there's been a shift of revenue away from the packer. So the packers are probably in the red right now. And some of that money has translated back over to the actual producers. And it needs to be, particularly in the cow-calf sector. It's been difficult for a number of years. And these guys got to build some equity back into their operations. And it's really good to see. I tell people as I go across the country, I'm as optimistic on the cow-calf sector as I have been in the entire time I've been in the operation. So there's good news out there.
As we are slow to rebuild the herd, is there concern about a pressure on the infrastructure of the system with low numbers for processors and at a time that consumer demand to be pretty good?
Well, you know, that's always a concern. Cyclically, when we go through these changes, if you get a major plant closure because it simply isn't economical, then suddenly we get a contraction on the shackle space, and all of a sudden we're back to where we were, where the packer maybe has more leverage in that situation. I would contrast what we're going through right now, because during COVID, the government saw fit to throw a bunch of money into the butcher shop and the small finishing facilities, and there's a lot of those that have come online, and there's a lot of regional packers that are coming online in the next couple of years. So the actual producer, that feeder or that cow-calf guy, should be in pretty good shape in terms of having a better deck of cards in their hands than they were maybe 2 or 3 and 4 years ago.
What was the NCBA position, and is it a moving target still on price discovery for cattle and whether there should be mandates toward the auction system or how to make sure that the marketing of animals is equitable for all producers?
You know, and it was a hot topic, and it certainly is less so. But, you know, what we were saying at that time is this is all cyclical. I mean, you get rises and falls in the beef herd, and it didn't take any legislation or market manipulation by the government in order to get us back to where we are now. This is simply a function of the markets and supply and demand, and that's difficult for producers to hear when prices are depressed and there's more beef coming online than you have shackle space. But now we're in the catbird seat, and so we've got the stronger hand, and it didn't take government mandates to do that. And I hope that's a lesson to everybody. The market, a free market without government manipulation works a lot better than if you get the government trying to get involved in something, trying to come up with a fix where there is no fix necessary.
Still, there is a group of people who are pretty adamant that the packing industry is down to a small number and might have the ability to control.
Well, and it is the four major packers do hold a major portion of the processing capacity. But again, that's changing as a result of all the money that was thrown into the system, because you've got a lot of these small processors and regional processors that are coming online. My fear is that those processors are coming online when there's not a big supply of animals. And it's one thing to build that facility. It's another thing to keep it operational when you're having to operate in the red. So my concern would be more that the big four, as you want to talk about them, would be in a competitive advantage to those new regionals coming online, and they would be all competing for the same number of cattle. I hope we don't get into a situation where we see a couple of those plants fail and then get gobbled up in that new independent source of processing, get gobbled up by the major plants. That is something we definitely need to avoid. And it is an issue. There's no question about the fact that when you've got a major section of the market controlled by four players, that it can have an impact. But the numbers of cattle right now in the new space coming online, I think, goes against that trend and puts, really, I equate myself fundamentally to be on the cow-calf side. I feel more optimistic about that. I'm more concerned about the fact that we're going to price ourselves out of existence if the price of beef keeps going up. You know, it's great to keep getting more and more for your calves, but we can't drive our customer our way.
There is a political logjam in Washington, and the question is, how is this political logjam on the Hill, certainly over leadership, now a concern for cattlemen?
Well, it's a huge concern. Well, number one, let's just look at the farm bill, and nothing is happening right now. I mean, we can't get a new speaker. Nothing is moving in the House. You know, aside from all the other big issues you talk about, fundamentally to the farmer and the rancher, getting a new farm bill is pretty critical. And if we can't move forward with a new farm bill because of the logjam that's out there, that means we run the risk of, one, not getting the government funded again here in another month or so, and then, two, not being able to move forward on a new farm bill, which is critically important to the success of farmers and ranchers.
What do cattlemen lose if the government shuts down for a period of time?
Well, the first thing that's going to happen is we're going to see our Farm Service Agency offices close, and in every county all across the country, that's the connection point for that local producers, for the cow calf, or maybe more so for the feeders. They're going to lose my livestock reporting being done on a regular basis. That's going to cause a market interruption if we don't have that reporting. Now, we have been assured that we're going to see the graders and the inspectors still in the plants. So those are going to be labeled critical infrastructure. But a lot of those other things, in terms of something as simple as processing out a CRP payment or an easement, you know, if I'm working on a permanent pasture easement for our operation, suddenly that whole process grinds to a halt. And the wheels from the producer's standpoint in terms of government interaction just cease to function. And you know, that may seem like a small thing to a lot of people that are listening to this, but when you're that producer and you have to work through that local FSA office or that NRCS office and there's no staff there, suddenly it doesn't work very well.
So Senator Grassley has mentioned he thinks maybe the best we can do is a 1 or a 2 year extension of the existing bill. Would an extension meet the needs of cattlemen today and for the future?
It will in part. I would look to the fact that if we have an extension, that's going to mean part of what's in that extension is an extension of the vaccine bank, which we first got authorized in 2018. So funding that from an animal disease traceability and protection standpoint is critical for producers. You know, also that would keep the CRP payments and a lot of those other programs functioning. But I would have to disagree with Senator Grassley that a one-year extension is a good thing, however, because it's very difficult to plan when it's a one-hit wonder. I mean, I do think that Senator Stabenow wants to get a farm bill done before she leaves office. That means that we may be working under a continuing resolution for a year, but probably I think we're going to get something across the finish line, but it may not come until the end of next year before she leaves office.
Cattlemen have proved big participants in conservation programs that are being offered in Washington, but as Ms. Stabenow was working to gain additional funds in the Inflation Reduction Act for those programs, it was determined that there are a lot of subscribers, but not enough funds to go around.
And that is an accurate description. You know, the amazing thing about those conservation programs, they're voluntary. And you're leaving it up to the producer to see if that is going to be something that they want to supplement their operation with, if they can make their operation more functional with that. That's the best thing of those programs, because they're giving the choice to the producer. It's not a government mandated participation. And because of that, they've enjoyed great success. It's not a cram down situation. It's that producer coming in and saying, okay, this practice can help my operation and can help my operation from a sustainable standpoint. Part of that is also that means that there's kind of a run on the bank, so to speak, in terms of more applications than there is funding. So increasing the funding for that is going to be critical to the success. If we want to talk about the good things that farming and ranching do in implementing practices that help that continue, those voluntary conservation programs are critically important to fund and also to help roll out the future for agriculture in America.
Todd, what should be said to those who would like to eliminate or further challenge federal checkoff programs?
Well, the first thing I would say to them is look at who's behind this. I mean, what really frustrates me is we got animal rights activists that have got involved in the Farm Bill lobbying process more than any of us have ever seen before. And what are they attacking? The number one thing they're attacking is the checkoff program. And why do you attack the checkoff program? Because it's successful. You know, for every dollar I put into that program, I get almost 12 bucks in return. So why wouldn't the animal rights activists attack a program that's benefiting the industry? And so to those misguided few that are out there, that are against the checkoff program, all I would ask them to do is look at the names behind the organizations that are making these accusations, and suddenly you're going to see HSUS and ASPCA people all over in there, former employees, people that really want to put the beef industry out of business, And they're using this mechanism as a means of attacking it. And if nothing doesn't blare a horn at you, like having an animal rights activist come after your programs, I don't know what it is, because clearly that is the message that's out there, is that these groups have decided that they're going to attack the programs that are successful, that are making results, and we're hearing that the message maybe gets diluted on the Hill because they really don't know the true story behind the story. If you got a Marty Irby who's advocating doing away with the checkoff, he's doing that for one reason, and that's to advance an activist call to do away with the meat industry completely.
The World Meat Congress, as I understand, had attendance by some NGOs. Were your challengers clearly identified at the meeting, and was their motivation exposed?
Yeah, I will have to tell you that this is the first time I ever attended a World Meat Congress. I went in skeptical. I walked into the place, and I was the only one wearing a cowboy hat in the whole place, so that put me at a little bit, put my ears up and caused me to look around. But what really came out of the World Meat Congress is that Europe and other parts of the world, the producers are already behind the eight ball. They've got the governments that have bought in hook, line, and sinker into the idea of the animal activists groups, and those organizations dictating how things are to be run. And there was a universal call for trying to get people aware of whether it's cell cultured protein or whether it's environmental activism and how that's going to dictate the shape of the industry for the next decades to come. I was impressed. I will tell you, I was very impressed the fact that the NCBA took the time to go over there and participate, because we got people now in the leadership of that organization and can help chart that going forward. And again, I don't come from that environment, so that's a little bit of a foreign area to me in general. But watching world leaders come together and identify that there are problems was pretty alarming. And to have a person get up there and do a presentation and say that cell cultured protein is going to replace 20% of the need for beef products on the horizon was scary, because that's again a hidden agenda out there by the Leonardo DiCaprios of the world and the Bill Gates and the other people throwing money into that idea, all with the idea of impacting the beef industry.
I understand the cattlemen who were present also asked some questions of the cell-cultured industry, whose genetics they used, and how are those owners of those animals being compensated?
Yeah, and I thought that was an awesome question, and I will give a hats off to our guys for bringing that question up. They go in there and they'll stand up and say, well, we're taking cells out of these animals, and from those cells we can produce 80,000 hamburger patties before we have to get more cells. You know, they're growing this stuff out of a biorefractor and throwing a bunch of goop in there and then trying to call the end product a meat product. Frankly, that's a misnomer in of itself. But to have them not even identify the fact that they're using a genetic animal that was developed for its potential by a producer, and then not looking to compensate that producer for using that animal and the technology that comes with that animal, I think that really caused some bells to go off in some people's minds that, hey, they're effectively looking to steal our property without compensation.
How big is the issue of animal welfare domestically, and is it bigger on the global scale? To follow that, how has NCBA been working to prove your case of animal care?
Well, you know, one of the best programs that was ever adopted that came through the checkoff actually was beef quality assurance programs and how to treat animals, how to handle animals. That has enjoyed huge success all across the United States, from the truckers that are hauling the animals to the people that are processing the animals through the chute to the cow-calf operator. We've adopted industry standards as to how best to deal with those things. You asked me to compare U.S. with the international scope. I will tell you we are in a far better position in the United States than they are in many of the European countries where that script is being dictated by the animal activists, and they're determining what you have to do in your operation and what you need to do to pass government regulations, because they are, in fact, forcing the government regulations. Thankfully, here in the U.S., we haven't progressed to that point, but we better be awake and at the switch and at the table negotiating those points, or we will fall victim to what much of the European Union is already victim to, where they have people telling producers that they're going to have to depopulate animals and they're going to have to reduce their herd size, that they're somehow the problem with global warming. You know, that whole mantra of cattle being the problem rather than the solution, we need to be the one delivering that message.
Soybean growers in the U.S. have had some success with the way that the product is raised and generating a market. I'm also told that these new generation of consumers may be as concerned about how their food is produced as to the food itself. So with regard to that measure, what emphasis have you given to sustainability, and how much bigger will the sustainability story become, either here domestically or in the eyes of your global customers?
Well, you know, when this type of question comes up, I always equate it. I get to wear my white hat when I answer this, because, you know, if you look behind the scenes and you looked at that true message, the beef production cycle and how we take it from a ranch, whether it's in South Dakota or whether it's in Texas or California, wherever, and we go through the process of that calf production, and then how that animal cycles through the food production, our ability to track that and to determine that we have a wholesome and great product for consumption to the consumer is really a wonderful thing. And it's going to continue to grow, because you're right. I think the consumer does want to know where their food is coming from, how those food products are being produced. And as a cow-calf guy, I think we have a great message. We are, in fact, sustainable. And what we have to do, though, is get that sustainability message out there even clearer to the folks sitting in New York or Washington, D.C., so that they know that we're recycling that grass. We're making meat out of that grass when no other use could come from that grass. What a better story. What a better way to do a sustainability demonstration than look at that cow-calf producer all across the country and the way that we're able to produce as much meat today with a herd reduction as far down as it is. We're able to produce more meat than we produced in 1970 with 30% fewer cows. That, if that isn't the definition of sustainability, I don't know what is.
Well, Todd, we want to thank you for taking time to be with us on this edition of Open Mic today, sir. You've got the last word.
Well, you know, the thing that I would have to end with is something I touched on a little bit, and that is the fact that we have a segment of society out there that has decided to interject themselves into the equation. And the fact that we've got a few animal activists out there that want to do away with all beef production, pork production, dairy production. The fact that we have those people out there, those few people that don't think that we should exist, and they're trying to change policy, that just really upsets me. The fact that Washington is giving these people any credibility whatsoever is beyond me. You know, we should be concerned about how we're going to feed the world in the future, and beef is one of the great answers out there. We got a safe, sustainable product that's been produced for decades and decades, and we're not the problem, we're the solution. It's these yahoos that are coming in from the outside and trying to interject their elitist attitudes into America and say that they know better how to deal with food production, and that their idea that there should be no beef produced and that cow can only exist just to roam around a pasture and never be put into the food system, that's just a bunch of garbage. And I would just ask that the people that listen to this remember that the farmers and ranchers out there are the people that put food on the table, and they're doing it in the best manner that they know how. And tell the animal rights activists and the others that think they know what we're doing to go play in a different sandbox, because they don't need to get involved in ours.
Our thanks to Todd Wilkinson, president of the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, our guest this week on Open Mic. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by NCIS, the National Crop Insurance Services. Crop insurance, the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. For AgriPulse, I'm Jeff Alley.